Blog Talk Radio.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sona shenevoratfet hakuigen ma'ilma.
The men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women police and fire services, the men and women, the doctors, nurses, the first responders at the hospitals on fighting COVID, and it's wonderful people to keep the shelf stock at the supermarkets to get us through the pandemic and all the inflation that's going on. Tonight's a very special program. We're dedicating tonight's program to a very special person. 17 years ago today, a young man entered our lives who's changed our lives forever. A young man who is fiercely loyal to his mother, his grandmothers, his grandfather, his family, and his friends. So happy birthday, Caden. We wish you all the luck in the world and your continued success. We can't wait to see how well you do in the rest of your life. If you've done as well as you've done this first 17 years, God help the world, because you're going to set it on fire. Well, I'm struck with tonight's a big night.
Yeah, absolutely. We have an unbelievable card, actually, with UFC 300. I know it was mentioned last week by one of the other correspondents on here that there really should be no complaint about the quality of this card, because we're on our third fight right now, and the first two fights have been fantastic, and you're seeing fights that could have easily been main event fights on a fight night card, and even one of the bigger fight night cards that take place in some of the larger arenas throughout the country. It's been great. And so if you're not tuning in, you're getting a whole rack of free fights as well on ESPN. Like, I'm watching them right now that are, that are very entertaining. So if you want your introduction, if you haven't been introduced to the MMA world, you want an introduction to see who the really top fighters are, turn on ESPN right now. You're going to see some very, very, very entertaining athletes who are absolutely putting on a show. I could not applaud this card more, and nothing but respect to the athletes that are out there right now.
Great. What fights did you see so far?
So far we had the first fight was Deiveson Figueiredo against Cody Garbrandt. So you have two former champions. Cody Garbrandt held the 125 belt, or 135 belt, excuse me, before he lost it to before he lost his belt. And then he won the belt in an epic fight against Dominic Cruz. And then you had Deiveson Figueiredo, who had four unbelievable fights with Brandon Moreno at the 125 division. Both of those fighters are no longer in or hold the belt or in 125, one of the two. And it was an entertaining fight, as always. Cody Garbrandt is always one that puts on a show. He always comes. He always throws hands. He always puts on entertaining fights. But, you know, he ended up losing that fight and a rear naked choke in the second round. And I think it's safe to say that Cody Garbrandt's days as a top fighter are probably over in 135. I suspect that he will be, you know, I never tell anybody they have to retire. It's your life. You know, you live your life the way you choose. If you want to fight, if you keep getting fights, keep getting fights. But I can see him as a guy that maybe some up-and-comer will try to challenge, because Cody still has hands. He still has speed. He can still put your lights out at any moment. And he caught Figueiredo a couple of times, but it wasn't quite enough to actually really put Figueiredo in trouble. But Cody made some mistakes and had some trouble exploding out of position, was taken down, fought the takedowns well, but a couple of choke attempts that clearly weren't there, but ended up giving up his back. Clearly unintentionally, he just, you know, made a mistake and ended up getting rear naked choked. But I think, you know, Figueiredo still has a chance. So I think really ascending 135 is probably a better condition for him. He was a big 125er anyway. And while he's on the shorter side and he could easily get touched by some guys with some quicker hands, if he gets close to you, you know, he has just as good as a chance as anybody to win a fight. So Cody, you know, I'm always going to root for a guy who's in there, who throws hands, who, you know, is willing to mix it up with anybody. I just hope that, you know, hopefully maybe have him fight some guys that maybe aren't quite top 10, maybe some 10 to 15 ranked guys, maybe some guys, because, you know, Garbrandt's no longer ranked, and try to get the ball rolling again, because he's getting up there in age. He really only has one shot left, I think, if he wanted to be a top-level fighter. So, and then the second fight was Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. And this was the, you know, the old guys fight. Bobby Green's 37, Jim Miller's 40. Bobby Green was just touching him up. I mean, Jim Miller just didn't have the speed and the defense to really evade the shots that Bobby Green was putting on him. And he looked pretty beat up at the end of that fight. Jim Miller, though, you know, 40 years old, guy's tough as nails. And I know, I think late in the fight, it looked like Bobby Green was going to finish it in the end of the third round, but Jim Miller was able to hang on. But I mean, one of the judges scored the fight 30-25, which gives Jim Miller two 10-8 rounds, which I can't necessarily disagree with, especially with the new kind of judging criteria they're supposed to do for MMA fights. Jim Miller was clearly dominated that fight. So, but you know, Jim Miller, I think, you know, he fight as long as you want. You're a UFC legend. You had more UFC fights than anybody in the history of the UFC, and you know, you'll fight an exciting, entertaining fight. But Bobby Green's level of competition, I'd say, since in the last few years, has been much different than Jim Miller's level of competition. Bobby Green's fought Jalen Turner, who's, you know, an up-and-coming 155er who's 6'3". If you can imagine a guy who's 6'3", fighting at 155, that should tell you something. And then you have Yeah, he also fought the current champion, Islam Makhachev. And you know, so he was fighting big-name guys. And off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you who Jim Miller fought recently. I really just couldn't tell you. And so I think that was evident that Bobby Green is just a little bit sharper. And his timing was better. His head movement was better. And it's just, you know, they always say there's levels to this stuff. And it was evident that the levels who Bobby Green has fought recently has been much different than the levels that Jim Miller's fought. And Bobby Green's ranked 14th, so it's not like he's a top 10 fighter or a top 5 fighter. But, you know, if you're fighting the best of the best, and then you fight a guy who hasn't fought the best of the best who's not currently ranked, you can see the difference in the performance. And I think Bobby Green, even though and he's lost some fights. I mean, Bobby Green's not out there beating these guys, you know, but he's lost. But, you know, when you're out there, when you're fighting the top guys, you're getting tested in a way that guys ranked below you just aren't getting tested, and that was clearly evident in this fight. If Jim Miller had any round, I'd say you could possibly give him a chance to win in the first round, possibly, because he did hurt Bobby Green once or twice. But in the second and third round was a bloodbath. I mean, he was just beating him up.
You know, earlier you were talking about Cejudo. He's got a fight coming up with Max Holloway. What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, Max Holloway versus Dustin Gaethje, man. I mean, that's who, you know, Max Holloway is everybody's favorite fighter. Everyone likes Max. Everyone pulls for Max.
Right.
And he's a you know, lovable guy. He's been fighting for forever. People are surprised. He's like 31. I think he had his first UFC fight at 20, and he's been around a long time, multiple time champion. You know, he had his wars with Volkanovski, but I just don't know, because the one thing that Max doesn't really have is that, you know, 1-2 punch knockout power. Max is on the skinny side. He fights at 145. Now Max walks around at 185. He's not a light guy, but you can see when he fights, he doesn't carry a lot of muscle. He's a skinnier guy, and he's tall. He's 5'11", 6 feet, fighting at 145. But I feel like when he's going to go in there against Gaethje, who is just – Gaethje's got bricks for hands. And Max has a great chin. I mean, Max has never been knocked out. But I just think the power of Gaethje is just going to be a little bit too much for Max. And I think this fight goes the distance, but I just feel like – I don't think Max can really hurt Justin Gaethje, where I think Justin Gaethje can really hurt Max. And I think that's why I give the edge to Justin Gaethje. But I think this is going to be an absolute – this is a third fight. If you want to stay up for this pay-per-view and pay for it, it's worth it, because that's going to be a very enjoyable fight. It's going to be very entertaining to watch.
Just so for a personal update, a good friend of ours and a contributor to our Wednesday night program, Vinny Papale Jr. just scored a touchdown for the Showboats, the Memphis Showboats, on USFL. If anybody's listening out there, it's a great brand of football that is being played in the springtime now. And we always like to shout out when one of our guys does something good. We also want to ask our fans for prayers for another one of our contributors, Bernard Fernandez. His wife is in very, very bad shape. She's in hospice care at home. But please, if you could just, if you don't pray, just keep a good thought. If you do, please say a prayer for Fernandez to help relieve her pain. Let me ask you, there's another fight that's coming up that has something to do with an MMA fighter, and that would be Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. Now, according to today's rag that came out, they said that they are going to, it is going to be a full fight. It is full face punching, everything else. You know, when Paul just went over to fight other than MMA or boxing rather, I should say, he looked sloppy, a little dirty. He won, but it was like he in a tomato can that he was going against. This is his most opponent. Even though the man is 57 years old, when you take a look at the film that they put out on his training film, Mike still looks like he hasn't lost a thing. Now, the question is, can he go over four rounds? You know, I know he has a punching power. I know it's hard. I know it's fast. But the question is, you're 57 years old. 3-minute rounds is like a year.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought?
Yeah, I know last week a couple of the guys were saying that it's one of those things where if Jake Paul gets touched by Mike enough times, it's going to be a short night. And after talking last week, I think I've reassessed it, and what you're saying, I wholeheartedly agree with. Mike Tyson is still 57, and also what we have to understand is Mike Tyson is not consistently training when outside of a possibility of a fight. So I went back and I kind of did a little bit more, just reading some articles and stuff like that. And, you know, Mike Tyson has had lots of time off where he's, you know, put on some weight and he's just enjoying being a businessman and promoting fights and being on podcasts. He's very entertaining. His own podcast is really fantastic. And Mike Tyson's now become this kind of 21st century philosopher when he talks about life and talks about ways to motivate oneself and also ways that one needs to think about how they address people and how they also the world addresses them and think about their own self-worth and think about how they may not be as important as they think they are and all that sorts of stuff. So it's really interesting to hear him. I mean, if you can get a YouTube search and just search Mike Tyson's philosophies and go through the shorts and you'll get hours and hours and hours of little things that he said over the years that are very compelling. Whereas, you know, it's easy to dump on Jake Paul because he's an entertainer first. He's an entertainer. Mm-hmm. He's a YouTuber. He's there to generate, you know, views. And, you know, his brother with Logan Paul being involved in professional wrestling and, you know, me being a professional wrestling fan and having seen him perform, he's actually a very good performer. He's very good at professional wrestling. He's clearly put in the work, but that's what they are. And I don't think we should discount the fact that they are primarily in the entertainment business. And there's a reason why Jake Paul has repeatedly challenged MMA fighters to this, but also they've been getting paid more than they were getting paid doing MMA. So I think I think you take the fight with a grain of salt. If you're interested in watching the fight, just watch it for entertainment purposes, not because you want Mike Tyson or not because you expect Mike Tyson to knock this fool out, even if you wanted to. Understand that primarily this is entertainment, and this is for people who are the fringe fight fans, I'd say, who just kind of want to see a show and be entertained. Can Jake Paul really, really hurt Mike Tyson? Well, yeah, I mean, anybody who's in there – I mean, I'm 45, and you know, my knee and shoulder hurts every day. So, you know, as you get older, things just start hurting. So I think from that perspective and, you know – but, again, I said this last week, and I'll repeat it again. We saw George Foreman hitting the bag at 76, and that bag was getting dense on it like he did when he was 26. So last thing you lose is your power. So I think it all boils down to that four-round limit, and if it goes beyond four rounds, then I think it'll be probably a rather dull fight because one thing Mike Tyson doesn't know how to do is defend himself. Mm-hmm. He'll stay low. He'll keep his hands up. Jake Paul's a little bit taller. So I could see this turning into quite a boring display after an initial onslaught of fury, I'd say, maybe from Mike Tyson, if that even happens. Because, again, this is primarily for entertainment. And after Jake Paul lost his fight to Fury's brother, Tommy Fury, I think that could have that threw a lot of cold water on the interest in watching him box. Oh, yeah. And so – So we'll see what happens. I know I won't pay to tune into this, but it'll be something that I'll probably just kind of see what happens. I'll read about it the following morning.
Sure. You know, you brought up the Fury name, and it's amazing that the two of them are going. If you take a look at Tyson at this point, he's laid on a couple major pounds. He looks bloated before this next fight.
Yeah.
The other thing that was newsworthy as far as he was concerned was he just inked a deal with Dubai that could make him a billionaire. He's going to do a series of fights over there, by the time the contract is complete, he will have $1.4 billion in the bank.
Wow! Well, I never put my hands in any. Yeah, I never put my hands in anybody's pockets. You know, good for you. Go make your money, man. Go make your money, especially in the game that you're in. I mean, the vast majority of guys who get involved in the fight game will never see this type of wealth. So if you're one of the ones that are able to do it, I'm the last person to begrudge you for that, because the thing I can say is, listen, I turn on the TV on Saturdays and I'm entertained by the product you're putting on. So you deserve, you earn all the money you can. And, and I don't want to go in there and get punched in my face and know the repercussions when I get older, but I absolutely love the fight game. And, the funny thing about Fury is even when he says he's in shape and when he says he's like feeling in the best shape of your life, when you see him, that's just how he looks. It's just how he looks. He's never going to be a guy that's going to be cut because he just doesn't train that way. But you've seen this guy go 12 rounds. You've seen this guy look, I always go back to the first Deontay Wilder fight, which I think if it wasn't for that knockdown, I don't think you can call that fight a draw. I thought Tyson Fury won that fight. And me being not the biggest boxing aficionado, even though, I'm hoping that the guys on this show are able to get me back more and more into boxing, tell me which fights I need to watch and stuff like that. But I'm hoping that, though. But we'll see. Usyk, we talk about Fury. Usyk's 37 years old, though. He's not a young guy.
Right.
He's not a young guy. So, Usyk doesn't, he looks like he carries a little bit more muscle, but it matches because he's shorter and he's a little bit stockier. But look, Fury is a very skilled boxer. He doesn't look like a guy who's a skilled boxer, but from what my limited understanding of boxing is, he's a skilled boxer. He doesn't come out there and try to just rely on power just so hopefully he can land one punch and knock you out. He's trying to win. He's trying to piece you up. He's going to use his strategy. He's going to lean on you. He's going to use his height and his reach to his advantage. And he's not going to sit there and just hopefully be able to catch you with a left hook or a straight right and put you away. So I remember when he fought Ngannou, and he comes out and he's telling him how out of shape he is. And Ngannou, first thing he said was, he's like, I know who you are. You can't fool me. Well, you see Ngannou looks like he was carved out of marble and stone, but Ngannou was like, no. I don't believe you for 1 minute. You could have a gut hanging all the way down to the floor, and there's no way I'm going to take you lightly. Absolutely not. Everybody's seen him too much. So, I'd say if anything, Fury can look however he wants, and he's been in the game long enough that I don't think anybody's not going to take him seriously.
Great. What do you think about there was a fight, back about a year and a half ago, Fundora versus Crawford, and now the WBO has ordered them to have a rematch. What's your thoughts on that one?
I feel like Bud Crawford is fighting a battle against people who will challenge his legacy more than anything. And, boxing is so hard to keep up with all of the different avenues that somebody needs to do to try to cement their legacy. But a lot of these top guys who are undefeated are definitely trying, but who doesn't want Floyd Mayweather money? Who doesn't want Floyd Mayweather exposure? Who doesn't want to be considered in that breath? And so when you see guys who are looking at mandatory fights or fights, they're not so interested in the fights that I would say the real hardcore fans want to see, because I think everybody's supposed to see him fight Boots Ennis but who knows if that fight's going to happen. And, even with the Crawford rematch, everyone's like, well, did we really need to see that? Because he basically got completely outmatched that whole fight. And, again, take everything I'm saying with a grain of salt when it comes to boxing. But my concern, though, is that, not concern, I'll say, is Terrence Crawford, too. And I also say this about Terrence Crawford, how much I like him as a fighter. It's nothing to do with boxing. It's the fact that he knows how to wrestle, and he's shown that. Terrence Crawford can take you down, and he could probably give you a good ground and pound. So there's that part of him too, that where so you got guys like me who are more MMA focused who see a guy like, oh wow, you got real well rounded fighting skills, who are of course going to want to see him succeed even more. You can become kind of more of a Bud fan. So as far as the mandatory fights are concerned by a various organization, I can't say that he's really even taken that seriously, because as we've seen, there's
there's so many belts out there that you don't need them all to be considered great. You don't need them all to be considered the best. In fact, in some respects, you may not need any of them to be considered the best. So, you know, I think he needs to do what he's also, what's he, 36? You know, 35, 36? He's got nothing really left to prove. So I'm of the opinion, as far as he's concerned, where if he's only looking to cement his legacy as one of the all-time great fighters, then, you know, do what those who have that opinion think you need to do in order to be that person, and not really pay too much attention to the three-letter organizations that have a particular belt that you have. You've already been two times undisputed in two different weight classes. I don't think there's much more he needs to do. So I as I'm getting slowly back into boxing, whoever he fights next, I'm going to watch that fight. I'll just put it that way.
Hey, Z, welcome. We were just talking about the WBO ordering Fondora Crawford fight to take place. What's your thoughts?
Hello, guys. Sorry I'm late. I'm a little bit on the road. Fondora and Crawford. That will require Crawford moving up to 154 against a tall, busy guy that he could probably time, but like, if he can't, and I'm looking, I'm still not like Fondora. As far as I recollect, he was undefeated before he saw Tim Zook. Well, he got knocked out his fight before. Or he might have had a fight or two to come back. But Fondora was undefeated before he got knocked out while being busy, by being the taller guy, being busy on the inside guy. Oh, my goodness, I remember the fight. I remember the fight because I actually, in the gym, I sparred a guy from New Mexico that sparred the guy who beat Fondora. I forget his name.
Wow.
But he came, I forget his name. But, I remember the fight specifically. The guy knocked Fondora out with a left hook, if I'm correct, maybe a right hook. And it was like Fondora was busy, and he was a shorter, ball-headed guy. And he just kind of was losing the fight. He was getting outworked by Fondora, and he just cocked Fondora, and Fondora couldn't get up from it. With that said, Fondora is a guy that I don't, you know, Crawford, when I see that, that's Crawford's avenue to get him out of there. Outside of that, Crawford will get outworked. I mean, if you're not going to get Fondora out, you're not going to beat him. You have to, like, a guy, and he, what happened with Tim Zoo is an anomaly. Here's also what I'm going to say. I'm not sure Tim Zoo would have won that fight without the cut. I rewatched the fight, and when I look at it, Tim Zoo had to do a bit of getting his, you know, the blood out of his eyes. But what's supposed to happen is they fight again, and Fondora hits him with a good shot, and, you know, he swells his eye.
Right.
Is Tim Zoo going to be? Is it going to be the same thing? What happens if he goes and breaks Tim Zoo's nose and bleeding his So when you deal with certain things, I can give you an excuse for this fight, but if it happens again, that's part of the fighting. Now, I would have suggested that Tim Zoo and their team, when it happened in round two. I would have stopped it in round three. Before round four would have started, I would have stopped it. I would have had that no contest on Tim Zoo's record, and then we would have rematched it. I would not have had my fighter fighting to that level of cut on his head. That's me rewatching the fight and really analyzing. I wouldn't have had Tim Zoo, not my fighter. Me personally, I would not have my fighter going out there in round four when they can stop the fight with that level of cut to where it's affecting me. No, it's not. I couldn't have did that. So, if Fondora against Crawford, I'm actually going to look at Crawford against taller fighters like Pascal. What is it, Pascal? Yeah, I'm going to look at him against taller fighters. You know, that's the only one that comes to mind.
Okay.
I need to look at him. But now, the other taller fighter that he fought, he Bodo punched him in his gut in the middle of round one. So you don't really have any film. I forget his name. But I really need to see him fight rangier fighters, busier fighters. What I do notice is when Crawford is getting a sense of timing, and it's kind of over with. What I do like about Fandura, he will change his range up. What I don't like is that as a taller and always a ranger guy, he likes to get inside and fight. He throws pretty good inside, especially uppercuts. I like him on the inside. As a taller guy, he has a pretty good inside game. But he'll get caught up, not bringing his hands back, being too busy. And he reminds me of a younger Jaime Munguia at times.
Mm-hmm.
A little more schooled to certain things, but not schooled to other things when it comes to that. Hopefully we'll talk about Jaime Munguia in a little bit. I'm sorry to be here late again, guys.
Okay. Hey, Armstrong, what do you think about Alex Pereira versus Jamahal Hill coming up?
This is going to be an absolute scrap. I mean, if you haven't seen an Alex Pereira fight, go look at his glory fights when he was kickboxing. I mean, he's a very entertaining fighter. He's got tremendous power. He has an unbelievable backstory about how he got into fighting, and very inspirational. And then when you saw the weigh-ins and you see Jamahal Hill, and look, he's built like a three-inch taller version of me. He's got, you know, guy carries a little belly on him, you know, but you can see the athleticism there. But and so you've heard some people say recently, oh, he doesn't look like he's ready. Man, that's how he always looks. That's how he always looks. Mm-hmm. We've seen him put guys down. I think that this is a coin flip. I really do. I as somebody who has had his share of fun with sports betting, I would not bet on this fight. I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it because I just can't seem to give anyone a particular edge beyond the fact that Jamahal does have a ground game, but I feel like – and he has power, but Pejeda – just there's something about him. Pejeda's leg kicks just seem to be, like, the way he can time, he doesn't telegraph his kicks at all. In that spot between your calf and your ankle over and over and over again. And with the way he does it, he doesn't have to hit you with 100%. He can hit you with about 65%, and that's enough. That's all he's got to do. And it's going to sting, it's going to hurt, and it's going to really hamper your ability to plant whenever you're trying to throw any sort of just a touch jab, or if you're trying to throw a teep kick, or if you're trying to throw a hook, that's going to compromise that just a little bit, just to throw you off your game. And Pejeda has, when he makes a fist, I mean, he's got hands like Shaquille O'Neal. At least I'll tell you this way. They've done a very good job with the camera work to make it seem like this guy's knuckles are huge because I was the markman. I took the bait. You know, I was like, dude, this guy's hands, it looks like he got frying pans. What's going on here? So it's an exciting fight to watch. Again, this card has been fantastic. We just saw Jalen Turner lose a fight that he was winning because he got a little too comfortable. But it's been I can't conceivably pick this fight. I think but I'm not going to pick against the champion because I've only seen him lose an MMA fight to what's his name?
Can you call me?
Oh, sorry about that. My connection cut off. I've only seen him lose a fight to Israel Adesanya in MMA. That's it. So because of that, I'm going, you know, I'm not going to pick against him because don't forget, we did see Jamahal Hill get tapped by Paul Craig. And that's why I'm like, okay, I don't want to just say that yet. But again, if somebody tells me that I'm completely wrong and I have no idea what I'm talking about and I think Jamahal Hill's going to run away with it,
I really don't have the evidence to disagree with them. And if someone says you're an idiot, Jamal Hill has no shot against Alex Pereira, I don't have any. I don't really have anything to say against that either. So I'm in defense on this one. I'm punting on this one. I don't want to pick this fight. I'll pick all the other fights in this card. I don't want to pick that fight. And I can't wait to watch. So hopefully I can stay up as long and I can catch that fight and don't have to wait till tomorrow morning to catch it.
Okay. What weight are they fighting at? Are they fighting at light heavyweight?
Yeah, with 205.
Ah, man. I like Alex Pereira, but I don't know if I like him at 205 in this fight.
He walks around at like 230. How he ever got to 185?
What did he fight at? His normal weight.
He fought
that,
at
that's
185.
That's all I worry about.
Yeah, but he's the 205 champ. You know, granted, he's only had two fights at 205. That's it. But
that's my
so
problem.
Big. Yeah, he's so. Whereas, yeah,
he's
and Jamal Hill, if he decided to lift some weights, he could easily fight at heavyweight. Easily fight
exactly.
If he decided, go lift some weights, man. Go lift some weights. You know, he can easily fight a heavyweight. And, you know, he's got heavy, heavy hands. And he's got ground game.
Yep.
He's got a ground game. So
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now
you're making me rethink my pick. I don't know.
I'm going to be honest. This is one MMA thing because, you know, I'm a boxing guy. This is one
right.
MMA fight that I kind of – been looking like I know a little bit about both guys. One thing is this, if it's standing up, is a bad favor to me. It's dangerous, but it's in his favor. It's dangerous for both guys, to be honest, but it's in Beheta's favor. Once it gets to like clenching and now. I don't think it gets a little different. In a fight, everybody, especially when you don't have the cleanest of striking, what ends up happening is that guys end up clinching. Guys end up, you know, getting in the wrap. And that's in a natural fight. Even in boxing, even in the cleanest of sports, guys end up close, you know, skin to skin. When you're skin to skin, that is where Pereira is in a little bit of danger to me. Now,
yeah,
I agree. He's
there,
not
though.
A slouch.
I think it's this. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, Pereira's not a slouch when it comes to that. He's pretty good in the clinch at that. Mm-hmm. On the ground, I'm gonna pick against him. I'm sorry about that. In this one, I that is not in his favor.
I think if it gets dirty, you know, I agree with you there. If it gets dirty, if it gets, you know, we get some dirty boxing in there, we get a lot of clinch, we get a lot of knees, and I'm not talking about Muay Thai knees, because Muay Thai knees are very clean. You know, you have a specific position. Both fighters are bringing knees up. They're doing, you know, angular hits to the side, hits to the ribs and stuff like that. I'm talking, you know what I mean, when it's just nasty, and they're just throwing whatever free hand they got, some Don Fry kind of hits. You're trying to come up the middle with your knees. You might grab a leg to see if you can just throw them off balance a little bit. Yeah, that would definitely be in Jamal Hill's favor. That would definitely be in Jamal Hill's favor, yeah. As I said,
I'm sorry, one thing about it, either way. Yeah, one thing when it gets in the mix, especially when you're trained, when it gets in the mix, things slow down a bit when you get in the clinch, so that emotions kind of they run its course. When you get in the clinch, like your emotions run its course, so now you got to think a little more when you're in the clinch, and that's just in fighting terms. So when that happens. The guy who's trained better in a clinch, usually, wrestler means a lot. The guy who's trained, like some guys are trained to get in a clinch and try to get you down. Those guys work out pretty good too. But whoever's rougher in the clinch and can stay on their feet usually wins the clinch. who's ever on their feet and can be rougher. So when you say rougher and nastier, that does have an impact on what's going to happen in the clinch. As far as that's concerned. So when you say it like that, I mean, Pajeda's, he's a nasty guy on the feet, period. My thing is, if he stays on the feet, Pajeda could go ahead and knock him out because I think he's cleaner on the feet. Heavier-handed, I kind of almost want to rank him even because Pajeda's pretty heavy-footed, too.
That's true. And we got to remember, too, that when he again, I'm not going to act like I said before. I could be swayed either way. But we got to remember the Johnny Walker fight. Remember the Johnny Walker fight. Hill didn't even touch him cleanly and put him out. Didn't even touch him clean. I mean, yeah. So
have you handed and footed?
Yeah, I can't pick this fight. I just can't pick this fight. I mean, I'm
just ahead of the edge.
Probably it. Yeah.
I'm going to give ahead of the edge because if we pick three things, Pajeda kind of has an edge on two things.
He has an edge
on the stand-up. And,
right.
I mean, he's on the ground, and I don't even want to get to the clinch part. Really, Pajeda is he's a cleaner guy, period.
Mm-hmm.
And as a cleaner guy, you have to navigate through a cleaner stand-up guy to get to where, and Pajeda, to me, is a little cleaner than oh, my God, I forgot his name. That's it. But he's cleaner. And
his technique is definitely, I would say, superior. But, you know, he's got that unorthodox technique. You know, Hill's got that unorthodox technique, and it's just, man, it's not a fight I'd want to pick. This is not a fight I want to pick. But you know what?
Fight I want to see. It's a fight I want to see, not a fight I want to pick.
Yeah, exactly. You took the words out of my mouth and you said it much more eloquently than I could have at this time.
Hey, Zeke, let me ask you a boxing question. Do you think the question came up today. Do you think we'll see a Joshua Fury fight this year?
Not this year. Not this year because I don't think Fury is going to be Usyk. But however it goes down, Fury is going to retire soon. And if he does fight, I don't anticipate Joshua. Like, he has to beat Usyk in impressive fashion and nothing be wrong with him to where he'll fight Joshua. Under any other circumstances, he doesn't fight Joshua. And me personally, I see other circumstances. I just don't see him. I don't think, like, he could go out relatively undamaged as far as, you know, getting beat on for 12 rounds. But I don't see him winning against Usyk. I don't see, like, and as far as Joshua's incentive, they're going to have to put a whole bunch of millions of dollars up for him to see Joshua, even after the Usyk fight. And I just don't see that. I don't see him fighting Joshua ever. I don't see Tyson. I see Deontay Wilder fighting Joshua sooner than Fury. You know, over the European promotions, however it goes down, I just don't see those two guys matching up, you know, ever. Just because it's not going to benefit Fury at all to see Joshua. And Joshua, he actually can move on, and it would be better for his career, to me, if he does not see Fury. Because I don't, right now, I will pick Fury, but after the Usyk fight, maybe a year from now, even if Fury wins, Fury is getting older and older and older, and his skills are diminishing. And Joshua, he's not so much. He's not so much. So I just don't know. I have to see the Usyk fight before I even think about Fury fighting Joshua.
Can I ask you
honest.
A question? I just
want
to ask a quick question because something that we were talking about earlier, can I just ask a quick question? You know, we all know about Fury's physique and how he's never going to look like that. He's never going to have that body.
for whatever reason. But does because of the Ngannou fight, is he less committed to training than he used to be, just from your perspective?
From my perspective, for the Ngannou fight he was absolutely less committed to training for Ngannou. He didn't take Ngannou seriously.
He got dusted by Joshua, as I would expect someone of his particular boxing quality. I mean, look, Ngannou he's got power for days, but even when he was an MMA fighter, it wasn't like he had the best MMA technique either. He could just put you out, and he was so big, and he could take hits that, you know, eventually he was just too much for people. He's just too much. But in a sport that is controlled as boxing is, I was like, okay, with the Joshua fight, I was like, that's what I was expecting to see him doing boxing anyway. So that's why I asked the question about Fury.
Okay. Armstrong, what do you think about Aljamain Sterling versus John O'Malley rematch?
That's not going to happen. Aljamain went up to 145, and the fact that Sean O'Malley is going to be fighting his best friend, I think if anything, that fight will only happen if Aljamain wins his featherweight fight. He's got to win this fight. He's fighting tonight. If he wins that fight and Merab Dvalishvili loses and they can figure out a way to make that a fight where they can go, look, Aljamain, you can stay at featherweight, just come down. It would be nothing more than really just a way to generate some interest for a pay-per-view fight. I just don't see that fight occurring, though, because if Merab wins, that rematch is never going to happen. If Merab loses, then I think Aljamain has to win this fight. If Aljamain loses this fight, the interest in that fight is not going to be that great because they're going to go, yeah, but you just lost. And Aljamain Sterling he walks around at about 180 pounds. He's a big 135er. I mean, they even have pictures of him when he was in training, and he's shredded, and he was 186. So when you're 186 and you're cutting down to 135, that is a lot. So I'm just wondering that. I just don't see a guy who's in his 30s, who's obviously on the second half of his MMA career, wanting to go back down in weight unless there was an opportunity for him to really get a huge payday. So too many things would have to fall in line for that to happen, and I just don't see that fight taking place.
Okay. What do you think, Z? Okay.
Hey,
let me ask you another question.
And Sean O'Malley, sure. Right?
Yeah,
right.
I don't think that fight's ever going to happen.
I mean, all I can think about is technically Aljamain Sterling better take him down. That's all
yeah.
I really can say. He better take him down. And Aljamain Sterling, he's athletic enough too. If Sean O'Malley gets up, Aljamain Sterling's going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm going to say. Now, Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, which already happened. Which already happened, though. It already happened. You know. Yeah, I'm like.
Yeah.
You know.
If that fight happens again,
it'll be because Sean O'Malley, who's 5'11", and he is rail thin. If he, you know, as he gets older, it's going to be really hard for a guy as tall as he is to stay at that weight. That's
yeah.
the only way I see that fight happening. Because I just don't see Aljamain wanting to go back to 135. Those weight cuts are, like, the way they cut weight in MMA is absolutely brutal. It's absolutely brutal. So I can see if that fight was to take place, it would have to take place at 145. Yeah. Yeah, but my thing with MMA is just like the gap between the weight classes, especially when you get above 155. I mean, you're going up 15 pounds, 20 pounds.
Yeah.
It's just a lot. And as you get older, man, especially some of these guys.
In boxing, 15, 20
yeah,
pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at Devin Haney.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about Alex Pajedo fighting. Alex Pajedo walks around at 240. fighting at 185. Like, what are you doing? It, yeah, Devin Haney's another one. I saw him. I was looking at that fight as a guy who's not, you know, I'm going to start, listen, I'm so glad I'm back on this show again because you guys got me watching boxing a number of years ago, and then I adopted my daughter, and then, you know, that just kind of took my time away, but I can't wait. I'm hoping that I can just start putting some text messages in, telling you guys, tell me which fights I need to watch, which boxers need to pay attention. I saw Devin Haney, though. I'm like, he's fighting at 140? You got to be kidding me. That guy should, like, he should be fighting at 160. You got to be kidding me. I'm like, is he 5'2"? Because that's the only way I can be fighting at 140. You got to be 5'2". That's it.
Hey, guys, yeah, we're joined by the birthday boy himself, Mr. Caden Jackson Carroll. Caden, welcome.
How we doing?
Happy birthday.
Hey,
and
happy
we dedicated the show to you.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you.
The show was dedicated early on the start of the show. We dedicated the program to you.
Oh, thank you. It means a lot. I could only get on here a little late. My bad about that. But, you know, I was watching 300, got caught up in that event. This might be the greatest combat of sports event in history. I don't know.
Yo, I was just saying that. I was like, this card is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
And it's on my birthday. It's like, no, it's just all perfect.
Well, we arranged that for you, Caden, so you'll know.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Yeah.
Guys, I love you. I'm going to go through a bit of stuff. I love y'all. I'm going to have to get off the phone right about now.
Okay, thanks, Zeke. All right, thanks.
Yeah, I'm on the road. So.
Good to hear from you, my friend.
Have a safe trip.
Oh, man, y'all have a blessed night, and y'all know these shows, you know, in memory of Bob, Coach Bell, and Dr. Chris.
Thank you.
Always.
Thanks,
you
very much.
I love you.
All right, Kane, you want to talk about what you just watched?
I just saw Diego Lopez absolutely dominate Sodiq Yusuf. Diego Lopez has been tearing through the unranked fighters in UFC so far, and he just blasts his way onto that ranked division. And
I just watched the same fight.
Dominated Sodiq Yusuf. What are you saying?
I was actually surprised that happened. Sodiq Yusuf was also running through people, and he was looking really good.
That's true.
And the way he got hit. He got it handed to him this fight. Just handed.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I'm a fan of Diego Lopez, and I was a fan of his for a while, and I was like, yo, this kid is something special. But I wasn't expecting that. I was not expecting that. I was sitting there, you know, trying to cover in my mouth not to scream because I knew I was on this show. I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, the next commercial break, I'm going to rewind it and try to see that again because that was surprising, absolutely surprising.
That Bobby Green Jim Miller fight was crazy too.
Great fight.
And
now we're
about
to see Holly Holm get destroyed.
Yeah, I think so as well. Did you hear about the fight bonuses?
Yeah, $300K. Good.
Like,
Bobby Green. I hope he gets it. I hope Green gets it because he earned it.
We still got some fights. I'm just saying until we see Justin Gaethje, he's the star. Honestly, he is the most entertaining fighter in the UFC right now.
Justin Gaethje is the most entertaining fighter I've ever seen, hands down. I will say that from a fighter that I like to watch, I have seen every one of his fights, and that's probably the only fighter I can say that I have seen every one of their fights is Justin Gaethje.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching. Win or lose, man, that guy is – what you want in an entertaining prize fighter is Justin Gaethje. So I got nothing but respect for him.
There's something about young Conor, though. It just hits differently.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason why I put Gaethje differently is because Gaethje's just Gaethje. And, you know, we can talk about young Conor, but middle-aged Conor just isn't quite the same, whereas I feel like this current Gaethje is the same guy. Now, granted, love Conor McGregor. Love the death. I've watched all his fights as well, and he is also there's a reason why that guy is as popular as he is. And it's you can say what you want about his ability to talk trash. He is an entertaining, great fighter, and his fights are fun to watch, bottom line. Because I barely even watch press conferences. I just want to see the fight.
I want to talk about this main event, though, with Pereira and Jamahal Hill. Before, on the last – on the last show, I said that Pereira was going to win, but you can't count out Hill. Now I've changed it to my hot take. I think Jamal Hill is going to beat Alex Pereira. There's something about it.
Whoa.
I feel something.
Okay.
I remember when Jared Cannonier fought Israel Adesanya on this show, that was my hot take of the year, that Jared Cannonier was going to beat Israel Adesanya. Didn't happen.
And he gave him a fight.
Probably
he gave him a fight,
happen
though.
Again. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But this probably won't happen again. But you know what? I'm here for it. This is my hot take of the year.
Well, you're better than I am because I completely punted on this fight. I was like, I can't do this one. I just can't. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't pick.
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah. I can't wait to see it, though. I just can't wait to see it.
There's something about Jamal Hill's footwork, though. Like, you look at it sometimes, he's just, like, it's almost like he's just standing with his feet, like, together, trying to do that against an elite kickboxer. His legs are going to be eaten up like some mosquitoes.
But we still feel like he's going to win, though, because I feel like he's got a real, real, real good chance to end this fight. If it gets dirty, if it gets ugly, if it goes to the ground, you know, I think the head has got – he's got perfect technique, but this is MMA, man. I mean, it gets ugly sometimes. It gets real ugly.
It's all about getting close to Pereira in this fight. And can you endure – what it takes to get to Pereira, get a hold of him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let me ask you a question. I know Volkanovski is one of your favorites. He claims that Dana White is snubbing him on fights. He's not putting him in. What's your thoughts?
I see it.
I have a take on this, too, but I'd love to hear what you have to say.
You do see his track record in his recent years. So I get why he's trying to slow down production, but in the end of the day, he's a UFC legend, and he should be getting some more fights. But I have noticed that he hasn't really been that as active anymore.
Yeah, I agree, but I also feel like, you know, Volk's 36, and I feel like Dana White sees a little bit of Chuck Liddell in Volk as a guy who probably wants to fight more than he should, and I think Dana's like, look, man.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to destroy him, exactly. Dana's got nothing but respect for Volk. He loves those Australian guys. And look, the fact that he took Volk has three losses, and two of them are to a guy in a weight class, or four losses, and two of them are to a weight class, a guy above him who's the current champion. So, and he took one of those fights on 10 days' notice, and I also think that first fight, you could watch that fight 10 times and not have the same outcome because he was very close to winning that fight. So, Volk he's been in some real battles. He's been in some real wars. And Volk has also talked about his challenges when it comes to making sure he's trying to keep his head right. And look, it's easy to hate on Dana White. It's very easy, and a lot of people do so. But, you know, he knows these guys, and he has a business to run. And I think it's wise of him to say, I know you want a rematch. I know you want the fight again, and I'll give it to you. But you've got to take a little bit of time. You've got to take a little bit of time because you're no good to me if I put you out there again and you get your brains beating in 30 seconds. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So I get where Volk is coming from, but I understand why Dana would be you know, sending his calls to voicemail every now and then.
Yeah, and we've seen a historic decline in fighters that get knocked out. You know, as soon as you get that first knockout, you've seen that.
Yep.
And they lose that little bit of spark, lose that little bit of chin, like you saw with Cody Garbrandt, saw it with countless fighters.
Yeah.
Chuck Liddell, one of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
especially with older guys in those lighter weight classes. You get 155 and below, those older guys, they just struggle. They just struggle.
Like, when Tony Ferguson got knocked out by Michael Chandler, he was never going to be the same fighter.
No.
When I watched that five.
When he got knocked out by Gaethje, he wasn't the same fighter.
What did you say?
Right. I said, when he got knocked out by Gaethje, he wasn't the same fighter.
True.
So,
true.
Yeah. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly. And Volk is a legend. He's an absolute legend of this sport. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was not the biggest Volk fan until the third Max fight, and he shut me up. I was like, okay, I've seen enough. I got nothing negative to say about him as a fighter. That third Max fight, he humbled Max.
And but people don't realize about Volk too. Volk's 5'6". He's got long Conor McGregor arms. He's got real long arms, and he can get that jab in there. And Max is 5'11", and he was touching Max up like crazy that third fight. Max had nothing for him.
I'm not gonna lie, I think one of the futures of the UFC is Ilia Topuria.
Yeah, I have to agree.
His reign is gonna be long. And he's so good. He blew through Volkanovski like it was nothing.
He did.
He's blown through
every surprising
single he's ever gone against.
Yep, absolutely. And I've gone back and I've watched Topuria's fights again to try to refresh my memory about him. And yeah, I'm like, okay, I don't want to say that I shorted him, but he's better than I thought he was when he was younger. You know,
if we're being honest, he's putting Sean O'Malley to sleep, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, Sean, stay at 135 until you get a little older and beef up a little bit. Because yeah, I agree. Because I don't think Sean O'Malley could beat Volkanovski.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah.
Well, guys, we're at the end of our hour here. In fact, I did extend it a little bit so Caden can talk a little longer. We appreciate I really appreciate you carrying the program for the first 20 minutes almost by yourself. Caden, I always appreciate you coming in, especially on your birthday, and we wish you a very, very happy the rest of the day. Thank you for the lunch that you provided for my mom and I today. And we look forward to many, many more years of success with you.
Thank you.
Okay, you want to leave us out, Caden?
What did you say?
I said, do you want to leave us out?
100%. I think it was an amazing show for a little bit time that I was on. Everybody needs to tune into this historic fight card. Again, maybe the greatest combat sports event in history. And love my family, love my fighting words family, and hope everyone has a good night. See y'all later.
Okay, Armstrong.
I just want to say that I absolutely love this show. I love the Fighting Words show. I'm so happy to be back in the Fighting Words family. When you texted me, I smiled ear to ear, and I was like, yes, I've been wanting to get back on this. And I was talking to my wife, and I just said, I got to do this. You know how much I love coming on this show to talk about a sport that I love that I don't really have an outlet for because my current contemporaries don't follow it. So the guys that are on this show, when I hear them talk, it gets me excited. And so I just want to say thank you, and I want to say please tune into UFC 300, and please follow the show. A lot of fun, and also want to give a special shout-out to my wife. She's actually been working really hard. She took a weekend off. She's out of town. She's actually down in Florida just enjoying herself. And give your families a hug and a kiss and just be thankful for everything you have in life.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police and fire services, doctors and nurses, at the first responders, on COVID, and of course, the wonderful people in the supermarkets that keep our shelves stocked. These programs are also dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Patrolman Anoffa Crispin, Lakeland PD. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs PD. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department. Sergeant Chris Levake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department. Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police. Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department. Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Artif Hope, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department. Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department. Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Zachary Benn, Florida Highway Patrol. Sergeant Chris Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Police, Temple University security officer, and Sergeant Armando Mendez, Philadelphia Police Department, Philadelphia Airport Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hand. Good night, God bless, and have a great day. County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. All units be advised, 1999 responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.